The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Connolly, Judge Bratfold, the Honorable Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals in this virtual hearing. The date is May 13th, 2021. The first case on our calendar is the case of Charles Carlson versus Faribault County Drainage Authority. Council, you each have 15 minutes for your oral argument this morning, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please introduce yourself and your client prior to beginning your oral argument. With that being said, we will now proceed with the appellant. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eric Cardo, and I represent the appellant, Charles Carlson. And sort of typically, I'd like to start by discussing the standard of review. Under statute section 103E.095, my burden is to show that that the court should be reversed, the lower court, because there's arbitrariness, unlawfulness, and it's not supported by the evidence, the conclusions of the drainage authority. But I wanted to make a more specific point about the standard review, because this case could very well turn on that, which is, you know, kind of atypical. So I wanted to bring it up. So as I assert in the opening brief, the landowner has a burden to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the property assessment in this case is procedurally incorrect, but not prove an alternative valuation. So our reading under the statutes that we have a right to object to a procedurally incorrect property assessment. So to explain this in full, let me just state two sentences. My client is not obligated to provide an alternative valuation when objecting to a procedurally incorrect government valuation. Now, my client would concede. You take two words out. My client is obligated to provide an alternative valuation when objecting to a government valuation. So the difference here is that we're saying that the government valuation was done in a procedurally incorrect way. That's different than objecting to a government valuation that's done in a procedurally correct way. And so I point to, and I don't have any authority in Minnesota, but this distinction was identified by the Colorado Supreme Court in the case Board of Assessment of Appeals v. Sampson, 105 Pacific Reporter 3rd, 198, a 2005 decision. So you can imagine, Mr. Carlson coming in and saying, "There's your valuation is procedurally incorrect. You know, I'll probably object to your valuation, but first you have to have a procedurally correct one." And this is important in this case because of the Minnesota case law summarized in Olkey v. Faribault County, 70 Northwest 2nd, 853, 1955, that there are vested property rights associated with the original ditch construction. And then that comes right into the Doe v. Archdiocese of St. Paul, 817 Northwest 2nd, 150, Minnesota, 2012. That basically is the government has to witness, has to have a proper witness to the damages. And so here, the proper witness is from the vested property rights in 1959 to the proposed improvement. By using the repair, the government has not prepared a proper witness and testimony to the damages that occurred from the vested property rights. And so my client shouldn't have to go into court or go before, you know, into court and say, look, you know, the damages are from 59 to the proposed improvement when the government's witness is saying, no, it's from 2016 to the proposed improvement. So you see how the standard review is such an important aspect of this. And we have to be careful because the laws are intended, these drainage laws, to protect the farmers. The farmers are engaging in this process and they need to be protected. In fact, when you start looking at the government's position in this case, that the property owner needs to provide an alternative valuation, that vested property rights can be affected by a repair, and that the witness, the government's witness, the expert, the property viewers, and so forth, that it can be from the last repair, it really is proposing a sea change in the law. And
can I ask you a question? Because I just really want to understand what we're fighting about here. And I know the respondent made a point that this is not a claim for compensable damages using Section 103E.091. Am I correct? Are we really fighting over the assessments here? Is that what the purpose of your...
The single claim is with respect to the unlawful procedure used in the assessments, correct?
Okay. So, but the, I mean, if we were to reverse, then your client would be claiming that he didn't have to pay any of the assessments. And I assume the assessments are the $200,000 that's mentioned, $200,000 or so dollars that's mentioned throughout the brief.
I don't want to get, we focused on one issue, and that is that the procedures used with respect to the property owner, the final engineering report, the property owner's report, and the viewer's report is procedurally incorrect. And so we're pointing out that it has to be reversed and dismissed because they didn't follow the statutory procedure. And the statutory procedure involves vested property rights. And the position of the government here, the Drainage Authority, is that in 2016, when we could have, affected the vested property rights by doing an improvement, instead we chose a repair. And they're saying that a repair can change vested property rights when a repair is intended to maintain the vested property rights. So in 2016,
isn't the vested property rights relevant only if you're claiming compensatory damages, right?
The vested property rights are relevant to the procedures in which the assessments were done. We don't have a proper assessment to object to. That would be out of sequence. What we're saying is, look, you didn't do it right. We don't have anything to object to until you've done it right. And that's why I started with the standard review from Board of Assessment v. Sampson, is that we can't, if the government witness doesn't do it right, then there's nothing to object to. Until the government witness does it right, our right to object isn't actualized. And so my client went in and said, you didn't do it right. If you wanted to change the vested property rights in 2016, you need to do an improvement instead of a repair. Repairs maintain vested property rights. And so you've messed this all up and it's got to be reversed. And the administrative state, and I'm sympathetic to the administrative state. I've spent my whole career trying to improve the administrative state, is that a person should be able to come in to one of these hearings and say, government, you made a mistake. If there's time to do it, there's time to do it the right way. And here the government took the time to do it. And there's always time when you do something, there's time to do it the right way. And here they didn't. They acted as if the repair affected vested rights. The engineering report, the engineer said he was told to do it by the county, according to his affidavit that way, or the Drainage Authority. And so he's not even attesting that it's done the right way. He was told to do it by the Drainage Authority. And that means that this witness to the damages, the viewers reporting the damages, it's not a proper witness. And my client is saying, okay, it's not a proper witness. So that's arbitrary, unlawful, not supported by the evidence. That's why 103E.095 reversal is required. The petition should be dismissed. And I guess the direct answer to the question is yes. We shouldn't have to object to procedurally incorrect government valuations. We're paying for procedurally correct government valuations, and then these individual landowners should be able to come in and object to a procedurally correct government valuation here, because procedurally incorrect, the whole thing has to be thrown out. I also want to mention, prior to the trial, I made a motion in limine to make sure the Drainage Authority had a last clear chance to correct the procedurally incorrect government valuation. But instead, they fought, they went through the district court, they refused. And so I was trying everything in my possible to give them opportunities to correct the procedural incorrect government valuation. And these cases are really important because the people have no protection against the government doing procedurally incorrect things except for the court. My client's sorry. We didn't want to be here. We tried our best to resolve this in many ways, but when it came down to it, you know, they were insisting on doing something that was procedurally incorrect to the extent that they worked through the motion in limine, which raised this issue squarely. They went to trial on this. They did prevail, but I think they prevailed because we don't have a good standard review on this issue.
Can I ask you this? Because I've looked at the judge's order in this case, and he indicates that the parties limited the issue to any procedural errors that were made, and that any other substantive issues were waived by your client. Is that correct? I mean, are you contesting that? That the only issue is whether, in fact, the judge even goes so far as to say the two orders should not have been combined, that they should have been combined, is what the argument was, and that was the issue about whether they should have or should not have been combined. Do you agree that that's the only issue that was before the district court and is now the only issue that is before us?
The issue is the procedural issue regarding what I raised in the motion limine, which I think the judge has characterized in such a way to describe it as a procedural error. But the motion in limine made it very clear, and at the trial, I presented the same issues in the motion limine, so that there was no way that either the government or the court could have misunderstood that we were complaining about a procedurally incorrect valuation.
The issue as narrow, though, as whether the two orders should have been combined or are bifurcated?
The issue that was tried before the court is the one I'm describing to you. One aspect of that claim is what he's describing, but that's not the claim that the landowner brought before the court. Now, if he's including what I'm saying, then I'm not going to say he's incorrect. But the point is that when you file a motion limine, you file your trial briefs exactly on this point. There's no way there's been a waiver. And I think that the opportunity for that was long gone because we had those objections weren't raised at the time of the motion limine or even at trial.
But you're not, as the judge indicated, you're not contesting here the factual issues, the accuracy of the engineering report. And damage evaluation. I mean, that's what the judge said, that you waived those issues.
Right. Our issue is, did they follow proper procedure in coming to the valuation? And the proper procedure requires respecting Olkey, which says the vested property rights are associated with the original ditch construction. When the engineer report at pages 8 and 12 says, we're taking the vested property rights from 2016 repairs, we're saying that's procedurally incorrect because Olkey says you have to go back to the original ditch construction. And so that is the procedural error. Now, if you take the government's position, the sea change in the law, that look, a repair is like an improvement. We can change vested rights whenever we want when we do a repair. That changes all the language of the statutes. And you can basically say, oh, okay, yeah, I mean, it's fine, but the vested property rights are associated with the original ditch construction. The final engineering report says we're including the repair construction as pre-existing conditions. That affects the property viewer's reports and the property owner's reports. And so in the end, the assessments are worth less because they're procedurally incorrect. And there is no way that lower court judge I didn't understand that. I think what how I read the order was, you know, that he's arguing that they messed up procedurally. And yeah, that's what we're arguing. They messed up procedurally. So in order for them to do an improvement, they have to appoint an engineer and the engineer has to do it properly. and the engineer didn't.
Well, can I have you, you've got 50 seconds here. Could I have you address the probably what is an argument made over and over by the respondent that there's absolutely no evidence in this record that there was any increase in flooding of the property or any effect of the vested rights, either, you know, even back to the 1959 improvements.
Yes. Again, this is a misunderstanding of the applicable standard of review. I'll repeat. The landowner's burden of proof is to show by a preponderance of evidence that the procedural assessment is procedurally incorrect. The landowner need not prove an alternative valuation. So all that stuff about flooding, all that evidence stuff, all we have to show is they made a mistake because they owe us a procedurally correct valuation. And for them to keep saying that my client has to incur all this burden when we, in a laser-like way, repeated over and over again, you got to do this right, it's just inaccurate, but it shows we need a new standard of review. Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, the respondent may proceed.
Honorable Presiding Judge Hooten, members of the panel, may it please the court. My name is John Kolb. I represent the respondent in this matter, Faribault County, in its authority as drainage authority for county ditches within Faribault County. As the court has already noted, there are many procedural machinations of this case. This case has been actually up to the Court of Appeals once before on separate issues related to the repair of the county ditch. Here we actually have two proceedings. We have a petitioned repair of the county ditch, which included actions and facilities to decrease environmental impacts downstream. We modified the outlet in order to stabilize it and ensure that it would no longer be delivering as much sediment and nutrient to the receiving waters downstream. All of this authorized under the definition of repair in 103E.701, which again does not necessarily go back to that originally constructed condition, as Mr. Cardle points out several times in his argument today, but goes back to restoring as nearly as practicable the hydraulic efficiency of the drainage system, which is what occurred in the repair. And then later in 103E.701, in subdivision six, it allows for that additional activity, which was the stabilization of the outlet. That repair occurred pursuant to the petition. The proceedings were completed. There was a final order for the repair, and there was no appeal from that order. Subsequent to that, there was a new petition for improvement to the upstream portions of the county ditch. The board went through that process as well and actually preserved or renewed the opportunity for the appellant in this case to argue about the adequacy of outlet and any damages that might have occurred to them with regard to the improvement. That did not occur either. Much of that was waived in, or all of that was waived actually, in the proceedings below. We were left with this argument that there was procedural error. And the court asked the appellant in this case to identify specifically from the record, which is what the court is required to do under 103E095, to say what was the procedural error. And the procedural error identified was this issue dealing with the engineer's report. What should the baseline of the engineer's evaluation have been? Well, having already conducted a non-appealed repair of the system, which established some new criteria under which to evaluate the improvement, the engineer evaluated the improvement based on what was now the new as constructed or subsequently improved condition. In this case, it was a repaired condition with modification as authorized by 103E701 subdivision 6 with the different outlet and the control structure. But regardless of whether that was done during the repair, the hydraulic efficiency needed to be respected and, in fact, was. And so, as Your Honor points out, there is no evidence of alternative damage or of different damages. The determinations were made in the proceedings below, and the trial court below found that there was either no merit to the procedural claim of error, or there was no evidence to support the procedural claim of error. So we are here. I believe that I am as potentially confused as the panel is as to why we are here and what we are arguing. The arguments that the appellants make in their principal brief tends to argue about the repair, which again was not appealed, and tries to argue that repair of a portion of a system is not authorized. That is clearly contrary to the statute and contrary to the explanation that the Dudick case points out as to what you can do in a repair. The decision to authorize the repair of downstream sections only benefits the appellant in this case to the extent the upstream portions were obstructed, as he claims, he got his section repaired right of way. So that repair provided immediate relief to the complaint of the appellant in this case. And then the upstream people had to wait and then ultimately petition for improvement to allow their water to take advantage of the newly constructed outlet, which would be more environmentally friendly.
And well, then the case that the appellant relies on is the Oki versus Fairbrook County case in support of his position. How do you respond to that case?
Give me one moment, Your Honor. As we explained in our responsive brief beginning at page 24, Oki actually deals with a statutory provision that's no longer in the drainage code. It was resolved. And they don't it does not parallel with what was presented in this case. Oki deals with a 1945 statute that governed improvements involving multiple drainage systems operated by different drainage authorities. That's not what we have here. In the special statute, again, the one that Oki dealt with, which was a 1945 portion of the drainage code, petitioner could force all of those systems into a single consolidated procedure before a single judge who could then pull all the systems together. And that's not what we have here. We have a single system. We have the code as it exists at the time of the petitions, both for repair and improvement. And we have, as noted by the trial court, compliance with the procedural requirements of those statutes and no evidence to the contrary. So I believe that the appellant's reliance on Oki in this case is misplaced. The provisions that Oki was dealing with under the drainage code no longer exist. And new procedures exist, which would be inapplicable in this case because we are talking about a single county drainage authority and a single county drainage system.
How do you respond to the arguments of appellant that it shouldn't be the appellant's burden to prove that there were damages, that the appellant, all the appellant has to do is prove that the procedures were not followed and that therefore the action taken was not authorized by law?
Your Honor, the appeal being taken under 103E.095 requires the trial court to review the record as a whole, as well as any additional evidence provided by the appellant to determine whether or not the decision of the drainage authority can be sustained. And so if the appellant in this case were able to point out a specific procedural error that would have rendered the proceedings invalid or incompetent, I believe the trial court, in fact, should have then dismissed the proceedings. It doesn't necessarily relieve solely this appellant, but it would say that the proceedings as a whole were invalid. But again, as the trial court pointed out, there was no evidence of that. And basically, under the standard of 103E.095, the court said, based on the record before it, the decision of the drainage authority can be sustained. And so, again, we are at a loss to understand what the exact procedural error is. It keeps seeming to come back to the engineer's report, but there is no evidence to contradict how the engineer treated the proposed improvement, how it evaluated the proposed improvement, and what guidance might have been gleaned from the engineer's report to the viewers in determining improvement benefits and damages. And so having not presented any evidence of that error, and the court having not found whatever evidence was presented or whatever argument was made as to that error was either not valid or not supported, we don't think there's any basis to reverse the trial court's decision in this case. Your Honor, I have further to argue.
Am I correct that all of the improvements and repairs have been made already?
That is correct. That is correct, Your Honor.
So we're really just left with the assessments at this point, there has been a waiver of any damages?
Again, if the proceedings are invalid, then the assessments would be invalid. But there's no evidence that the procedures are invalid in any way.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I'm
not hearing any other questions. Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Curtin.
Your Honor, my understanding is the improvement has not been completed. So the improvement is proposed. So that's where it's at right now. So let me read from the Supreme Court opinion in Elke for our citation. We have often held that when a ditch system is once established, owners of land who have recovered damages, who have assessed for benefits for its construction, have a vested property right in the maintenance of the ditch in the same condition as it originally was established, which right cannot be divested without due process of law. And then it cites many cases. And, so we cited that for the general principle, which I think is undisputed, that there are vested property rights in drainage systems. And the purpose of an improvement, as the government knows, is to modify the vested rights and to compensate people. The purpose of a repair is to maintain the vested rights. In 2016, the drainage authority could have chosen to do an improvement, and then it would have modified the vested property rights from the 1959 original drainage ditch construction. By choosing to do a repair, they cannot now argue, consistent with Olke's summary of the law, that they were changing the vested property rights by a repair. I mean, it's almost like they're intentionally avoiding the point, but I understand sometimes the point of debate or oral argument is to avoid the point. So when we go to the final engineering report.
Sir Cardinal, does either of your arguments as it relates to repair or improvement affecting the vested property rights depend on whether there has been any diminution in those rights? I.e. that somehow whatever the county is doing diminishes the value or hurts your client's property. Does your argument depend on that at all? If neither the repair or the improvement diminishes the value of your client's property or diminishes its rights, then no harm, no foul. Am I right about that or not?
No. We're entitled to a procedurally correct drainage authority proceedings. And the statute provides, the statute says if it's arbitrary, unlawful, whatever.
But even if that's true, if you have no damages, perhaps even if there was a procedural irregularity, okay, so, you have no damages, so you get nothing. Am I wrong on that?
Yes.
Well, what are your damages then? In this case, what are your damages?
The damages would be the effect on the vested property rights.
And what has been the effect on the vested property rights, according to you?
The 1959 vested property rights were eliminated by the final engineering report referring to the 2016 repair order.
How were they eliminated?
They weren't used as the baseline in the owner's property owner's review and the viewer's reports. And we're entitled to a procedurally correct damages assessment before we object regarding the specific amount of the damages. So this is the way that the statutes work. And so we're here because we have a private cause of action identified in the statutes. We can challenge the procedures of the agency because it affects us. And with respect to this idea that the vested property rights under the statutes can be modified by the drainage authority using a repair is a sea change in the law. And I won't repeat the Olkey citation, but heretofore, this has been unchallenged that a repair does not change vested property rights. But even though the response brief does not rise to the occasion of asserting a sea change in the law, it is. The vested property rights will practically disappear from the original ditch construction if the drainage authorities are doing repairs. Now, I think generally the public understands that the improvement means there's going to be a change in the vested property rights. You know, you better get going. Whereas repair, the understanding is that's not going to affect the vested property rights. And so that's a different proceeding.
If it's a repair, though, I mean, the repair is just to make the efficiency of the ditch as good as it was when it was originally constructed, right? Isn't it?
No, Your Honor, I think that's kind of engineering talk. We're talking about real estate law, and real estate law is vested property rights. And so I understand that the drainage authority wants to eviscerate vested property rights and that idea from the case law, that they didn't even mention vested property rights in their brief, which is just shocking to me that this disregard for the landowner's property rights. And I it's hard for me to believe that when we have clear laws like this, that our experts who are paid by the taxpayers, who have specific directions, don't follow that and the precedent of Olkey.
But if there, I mean, the only way the vested property rights could be made relevant here is if, in fact, there is more flooding of that property than existed in 1959. Am I correct?
The repair.
Because then you're claiming an unconstitutional taking.
No, that's incorrect. But according to the statutes, if the governments are acting arbitrarily and unlawfully, then the courts have a responsibility to protect the people from those actions. This is my client's government. It's my client's drainage authority, and it's acting unlawfully. It's disregarding the law. It's disregarding Olkey. It's disregarding the standard review I talked about. And we're petitioning the court to help us because it has to be better than this.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. We will take the matter under advisement and issue a decision within the statutory period of time.